You might be wondering why I'm coming to you from the headquarters of Herman Miller, and there is a little bit of history in this, because in the mid-90s I actually had a job in the Cabinet Office, and I was surprised to discover when I got there that the whole of the Cabinet Office, the whole of the Treasury, the whole of the Ministry of Defence had been equipped with Herman Miller chairs, the Aeron chair in particular. I was quite pleasantly surprised because it was a very comfortable chair. Surprised enough that I went off and bought one myself on eBay, and it still serves me very well in my own office to this very day. On the back of that, as an osteopath, I then, in my capacity as an osteopath, I then went down to Herman Miller's headquarters, which was then in the Tottenham Court Road, and met their ergonomist, and had a very long chat with him in their showroom, in their headquarters, and was fascinated to find there was a lot more to this than I had imagined, and it wasn't all about the simple guides that we'd been issued when I was at college. And so I thought that it would be a really good idea to come down to Herman Miller today and see what we could find out from Lillian Antonio, who is the ergonomist for Herman Miller International. Lillian's been with the company for over 5 years, has a long background in ergonomics, and I know she'll have a lot of very interesting things to say, perhaps some myths to bust about what we all think of ergonomics and seating equipment. Lillian, good evening. It's a great pleasure to be with you this evening.
Thank you.
Herman Miller's famous for very stylish, but also ergonomic furniture. Mm-hmm. Which is the emphasis, art or science?
That's a difficult question to... No, it's not a difficult question to answer at all. It's a real combination of both. We do lots and lots of research into all of our products. What you see and what we'll show you later on during the talk today is, you know, has come from years and years of research. The Aeron chair, which I'll show you shortly, comes from 10 years of research into anthropometrics, for example. But we also have a very rich design heritage as well that started back in the sort of 1920s, right, almost, with Charles and Ray Eames, which some of you may know, a guy called Bob Prosp, who in the 1960s designed Action Office, which is a really important part of our heritage. And also you'll notice from our seating that we use materials that are maybe different to the sort of traditional office chair, so it's not all foam and fabric, but all of this comes from years of research, not just that we thought maybe it looks pretty.
Right. So you just mentioned anthropometrics. I mean, mm-hmm. What's the difference? Anthropometrics as opposed to ergonomics?
So anthropometrics is, I guess, a branch of ergonomics. So anthropometrics is looking at the measurements of people, the measurements of humans, essentially. Right. So in order to get our chairs to cover a wider range of the population as possible, we use databases from all across the globe to ensure that our chairs cover as much of the population as possible. For example, again, I keep referring back to Aeron, I probably will today, but that will cover 99% of the population across its three different mm-hmm. sizes in the way that it's built.
Yeah. And I should make it clear to everybody that this is not a broadcast, a marketing broadcast for Herman Miller. We're here because my understanding is that you put a lot of work in this company into the ergonomics of the workstation, not just the seating, but the rest of it. Do you want to talk us through the extent of that research, I mean, and how much it dominates what the company does today?
Okay, well, yeah, I guess there's different sort of projects. I've mentioned the seating before. I also try to run research projects here in the UK, and we do obviously have a very large insights team in the US who also run research projects. I will be involved from maybe a new product introduction. So if we're developing a product in this country, then I will go out and test that with the users. We also do a lot of work around, you know, different areas. It's not just product focus. You know, we talk about the living office is our the way we're talking about the office environments at the moment, and how people work. There's different modes of work, but there's also different settings within the office nowadays. It's not just always this traditional workstation, you know, chair, monitor arm and desk setup.
Well, I have to say that this is a really refreshing sort of headquarters to come to, mm-hmm. isn't it? It's quite unlike almost any other headquarters I've been in. I mean, not only, it's an open plan work environment, but it looks, I don't know, somehow it looks clean and it looks healthy is the word that occurred to me earlier on. And of course there are sheep all over the place
there
as well.
Are.
I'm not sure quite what the purpose of the sheep is, but I did find that quite... quite an enjoyable factor of coming down here. What sort of research is going on generally today into ergonomics? Is it now a subject which is largely dead? Is most of it going on at universities? Is any of it going on at universities?
No, not at all. I mean, there are particularly, and I guess your viewers probably heard a lot around sitting is the new smoking. That's the big catchphrase for people at the moment, and it's something that's covered a lot in the media. I actually recently went to a conference which was talking about sedentary behaviour and not only the impact that has on your body in terms of the physical musculoskeletal issues, but also the internal processes. And they had some really horrible statistics around cancer and increase in diabetes and all of those things. So there's lots of those types of research going on in universities, which we try to keep a partnership with. We also, like I mentioned earlier, in the US have a much bigger research team. They're very much looking at, they've broken down ergonomics and the way they talk about it into sort of three different sections. So the physical, which is really what we'll be covering this evening, I think, the cognitive, but also the social as well, and how you can encourage people to use a space well, and interact with people. So I always use the example here, I think it's quite a nice one. The way that this office here is designed, as you know, it's got an upstairs and a downstairs. We're not allowed to eat at our desks. So we have to go down to the cafe area in order to be able to go and get a drink or go and eat. But this forces people a little bit into bumping into other people and maybe talking with people in other teams that they may not have otherwise bumped into. And it gets them moving.
and that's probably quite a healthy thing for us to be able to advise people as physical practitioners, because you know we're often, it's very easy for us to blame the workstation for all sorts of aches and pains and ills and so on, but actually coming up with a solution, a workable solution, is the challenge here. It's interesting to hear you say that, because Herman Miller have this fantastic resource which will be made available to you through the handouts of the download at the end of the broadcast. Called the Ergonomics Hub, I think it's called. And it's open to anybody. You don't have to pay to get into it. It's not something just for Herman Miller. But you've got all sorts of things on there, including something which said that seating can help your cardiovascular system. And that's going to come as a bit of a shock to a lot of people.
So that research was done with a university in Michigan in the US, together with our research team, but they ran the study for us, and that was looking at our embodied chair again, which I'll show you later on. But that was really trying to investigate, you know, what responses do your body have when it's sitting down, and they looked at people sitting for very long periods of time, because that tends to be what we do in the modern world now. But yeah, that actually showed that it helped to reduce people's resting heart rate.
Right. And so the quality of that research is presumably quite good, because it isn't just Herman Miller's marketing department that's come up with that. And has it been peer reviewed? Has it gone through proper scientific analysis and so on?
Yeah, so through the university that's done.
And I noticed that on your website, on the Ergonomics Hub, there all the references are there after these documents, so people can check those if they want to. Talk us through, if you will, the process then for analysing the ergonomic well-being of a workstation, if that's the right expression.
Okay, well, shall I show you with some of our seating? If I go through the main sort of what we would consider the, you know, what makes a good chair, so our ergonomic performance factors of the chair. If I grab one just to show you, it's easier for me to show you. Okay, thank you. Okay, so this is the Aeron chair. I've mentioned it a couple of times already this evening, and I probably will again, because it tends to be the one I refer back to.
Well, I will too, because it's the one I've got in my office.
Yes,
so I'm very happy with the Aeron
chair. That's good. So this chair was introduced in 1994. It was designed by a guy called Bill Stumpf, who, like I mentioned earlier, did years and years of research before he came to this. He not only studied the anthropometrics of people, but he also studied how people worked in offices. So what sort of postures were they using? What made them comfortable? What made them uncomfortable? And that's why when this chair was introduced in 1994, as you can imagine, it looks very strange compared to what was out there at the time into traditional workstation. But in terms of ergonomic performance, I guess if I start with the comfort, because that's always a very important factor for seating, we've broken down comfort into two parts. So we talk about pressure distribution, but we also talk about the thermal comfort. So the reason we talk about pressure distribution is the materials we use within our seating are designed to evenly distribute the weight across the seat pan and even across the backrest. So what can happen with older furniture or some foam and fabric seating is that foam tends to bottom out. Mm-hmm. So after a short period of time, foam can start to degrade slightly, and you end up with firm sort of pressure points right underneath your bottom. Okay. This helps to prevent this, and all of our chairs are guaranteed for 12 years, 24-hour use.
Right.
So that's the pressure distribution.
So what is this? Is this some particular special fabric that you're using, this mesh? I'm not allowed to call it a mesh, is that
right? Not allowed to call it a mesh. So we call it a suspension material because we think it's got some intelligence to it.
Right.
It's made up of a certain painted combination of plastics in order to give it that two-way stretch. It's almost like Lycra in, say, leggings or whatever, and it gives it that unique stretch. Mm-hmm. The other reason why we use materials like this is when Bill was doing his research, what they discovered was that actually it's the heat buildup in some of these chairs that actually starts to make people feel very uncomfortable. So you can imagine if you're sitting watching a film on the sofa, for example, even if you think you're in the most comfortable position, when you start to move suddenly, it's that heat buildup that actually makes you feel uncomfortable.
So what's the actual effect of that in an office, in a workplace? Mm-hmm. If you're in a fabric-backed chair or fabric-seated chair, then...
It's really concentration levels and sort of feeling, you know, when you start to warm up in a seat, you sort of start to feel a bit more drowsy, maybe a little bit less alert. So this is really about trying to keep you alert.
About the company getting more out of you for...
Exactly, keeping you productive. So in terms of the way that the chair supports you, we talk about back support, but we also talk about support in the way that the chair moves. We really believe this is quite critical. But let me start off with the backrest. So what they found just after they introduced the Aeron chair, Bill Stumpf wasn't happy with the way that the backrest was supporting the user on its own. So he did some further research with a guy called Brock Walker, who was a musculoskeletal specialist. He worked with racing car drivers, so very sort of high intensity environments. And what he noticed was that when people sit down, the position of their pelvis is obviously very critical to the alignment of the rest of their spine. So when you sit down, your pelvis rotates backwards and you end up almost in this posture that I'm sitting in at the moment, a bit sort of, in that C-shaped curve of the spine. So what they realised is that they needed to help correct this. So this funny butter shape contraption on the back of the chair here is called what we call in Herman Miller speak a posture fit. But what it's actually doing is supporting the sacral area of the spine. So it's supporting you right at the base of your spine and helping your to encourage
so
your pelvis.
Lumbar support.
It's not a lumbar support, so it's helping to encourage your pelvis to tilt forwards to naturally align your spine. If I demonstrate, so what happens when you sit down is you end up with this sort of C shape with your spine if you're unsupported. If I just increase that, and if I just sit back into the chair, you can see that my pelvis now is better aligned and my spine actually aligns quite naturally above it. There's no lumbar supports that are sort of forcing me into any positions. It's quite a natural position. So this has been really, really successful, and we design it now into the backrest of the rest of our chairs. So we, that's integral to the backrest design now.
If I may say so, I hope the cameras can see this. There are a lot of knobs and buttons on this chair. There's one under each of the armrests. There's two knobs here. There's another twizzly knob here and another one there and a twizzly knob there. Mm-hmm. There's a hell of a lot of knobs to fiddle with to get yourself comfy in a chair, isn't it?
Not really, no. There's no more. So there's lots of auto-adjust chairs out there now. That's become very popular, mainly because of the way that we're working now. But actually, if you look at our chairs compared to them, they only have one more button to press.
Okay.
And the reason for this is really so that you can fine-tune the chair to yourself, because we believe that that's really important. Yeah. And also, you've got to remember that men and women are very different in their body proportions and where they hold their weight. So whereas women tend to hold it in their hips, men will tend to hold it in their upper body. Yeah. So with the auto-adjust tilts, they actually only weigh you. So you can have issues with women not being able to engage the tilt, or maybe heavier men.
Right. So how long does it take to set that chair up for an individual then?
Once you know how to adjust it.
Right, come on, talk me through it. I'm going to sit in this chair. Okay. I'll get my pelvis right to the back.
You're all in. Ooh, okay, crikey. Good. So if you just lower it slightly so your feet are nice and firm on the floor, so right for height.
Right for height.
So just lift that one up, that's it.
Yep.
Perfect.
Okay. The feet.
Okay.
So legs are horizontal, is that good?
Yep, that's perfect. Right. Perfect. So what we always say, and this is probably the next section, so it's perfect that you're sitting in the chair now, is all of our chairs are designed to move. We design that purposefully so that you're encouraging movement throughout the day. We talk a lot about static postures, and I think I mentioned the research into sedentary behaviour earlier on.
Yes.
Everybody you'd speak to always says, well, I haven't got time, I have to be at my desk all the time, or I don't feel like, you know, I'm doing my work.
This is all very well, but if I'm at my keyboard and I do that, my keyboard's over there.
Yeah. So we need to get this adjusted for you, because you've just jumped in it and it's not adjusted for you, obviously. So on the left-hand side, you have two sets of levers here. So you have
two sets of levers on the left.
So you have the back one controls the backrest, and the front one controls the forward tilt, so that allows you to come forward slightly
more. So if I lift that front one up, what happens? I can just...
So if you come forward, and then you will lock yourself into position.
What, by pushing it?
I'm
locking it from going forward.
So no, so that's the limiter, so if you... So now you're sort of locked into position, but ideally, like I said, we would want people to be in that free float mechanism. So if I get you to push that back one back down, so you're free floating again, lovely. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then on the right hand side again,
turn around at the camera.
Turn around again, sorry, this is a bit of a show. So if you rotate this one forward, that controls the tilt mechanism, so it controls how difficult it is for the backrest to move backwards.
Right.
Now, ideally, you want to be able to sit in a nice upright position, like you said, so that you can do your upright seated work, but you should also be able to move if maybe you're taking a phone call or doing something different.
I can feel
like that
getting stiffer as I do that. There's a lot of adjustment in this, isn't there? So
I'm
not saying that's a bad thing.
No. For the air on that is, I mean, we've got to remember that it is 21 years old this year.
Right.
So there has definitely been an evolution in the in the controls. But yeah, I mean, but having said that, because it has got so many turns, you really can really fine tune it. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not now dropping right to the back of
its
range.
Perfect. So you're in control. Yeah. Do you still feel that support in your lower back? Perfect. Yeah. Armrests, you've got the clips at the back. Now, with the Aeron chair, there is a bit of a safety mechanism built in with these because of the way that the clip's designed. So you do need to, maybe take two hands to do the armrest.
Now, armrest. Well, I've taken them off my Aeron because I can't get under the desk because of the armrest.
Yeah.
So,
my opinion
of
armrest is that what tends to happen is people don't adjust them correctly. So what I find a lot of the time is people actually have them far too high.
Yeah.
And what happens then when they go to type is that they lift up through their shoulders and they start typing like this. And then that starts to cause issues with the muscles across the top of your shoulders and then up into your neck as well, which obviously then has an impact on, you know, your arms, wrists, hands and everything. Yeah. So with armrests, I would say that they need to be positioned so that you can keep those shoulders nice and relaxed. I don't think when you're typing, you need to be resting on the armrest, because actually, again, that keeps you in quite a static posture. Mm. And that's what we're really trying to avoid, is these static postures. It's the same as wrist rests and things like that. I'm not really a massive fan.
But I think the reason for that is that the wrist rest is, you're going to rest your hands on something, aren't you?
Yeah.
So Yeah, so I need to move myself, apparently. You're going to rest your wrists on something. If you haven't got a wrist rest, it's going to be on the hard edge of the desk, isn't it?
Well, and ideally, if you think of how a pianist would play the piano, yeah, your hands want to be floating. They shouldn't be permanently locked down right on the desk, because what happens if they are, yeah, is that you only move your hands side to side, and if you think of the anatomy of your wrists, then tendons start to mm-hmm rub together, okay, they become compressed, and then it starts right to cause other issues. So ideally, you know, your upper body should be relatively free to move, okay, so you shouldn't have desks in the way or wrist rests in the way or anything like that. It's really about trying to promote movement without these static postures.
Yeah. I've often wondered, I mean, I think a lot of these rules, though, were made up for people who were touch typists.
Yeah.
Who could sit at a desk and look and do that, whereas most of us don't anymore, do mm-hmm we? We're hunting for keys and stabbing with one finger. And I think, is there a different sort of element to workstation setup if that's the way you're working rather than that way?
It's trying to get the balance, I think, because we have to remember as well what tends to happen in the sort of more modern workplaces.
Can I sit down?
Of course you can.
Right,
a lot of us tend to have laptops now as well, which are probably promote the worst posture you can imagine, because you are hunched over into this position in that permanent way. And that's why there's been such an increase, well, that's why I believe there's been such an increase in neck problems, is iPads, smartphones, laptops, they are really starting to cause issues for people in these sort of very hunched over postures for a long period of time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I've also noticed, I mean, people, perhaps as they get older, perhaps as eyes start to suffer, there is a tendency to start getting your head closer and closer
to the
computer.
The turtle, we call that,
And I don't know if there's an ergonomic solution to that, or whether it's just go to the opticians and get your eyes sorted out.
Well,
or make this print on the screen
that's
bigger.
That's definitely, well, the opticians one is definitely a first call as well, but there is there are newer products now, so such as monitor arms that you can, which allow you to very easily and very quickly adjust that. And you've got to remember as well, it's not just older people. As the day goes on, your eyesight changes. As you become more tired, or if there's that stressful report you have to get out by the end of the day, you will naturally, wherever your eyes look, your body will follow. Yeah. So you do want to be able to have that ability to move the screen to a comfortable position.
Okay. So the chair's now gone, but there were quite a few controls on that. I mean, I'm guessing that a company, if I'm advising somebody who employs a large number of people, especially if they're hot desking, then they're not going to want to provide them with such a complicated chair, which everyone has to adjust for themselves.
Yeah.
They probably want to go for something simpler. Mm-hmm. What are the basics? What do they need in you know, the simplest of workstation chairs?
So in terms of, I mean, I think our controls are, I guess, Aeron in terms of the mechanisms probably isn't the the ideal one to demonstrate that. If I can just, can I grab another chair? Could I grab the mirror chair? Other one.
Too many chairs in this place.
that's the problem with being here. Okay, so if I just show you how simple these controls are in compared to Aeron. So this is our latest chair.
This is a different suspension mechanism.
This is
or
a
mesh,
different,
as I used to call it.
Yeah, this is a different suspension material, and then the backrest is constructed slightly differently as well. Mm-hmm. If I just run through the mechanisms just in answer to your question. So you have your height, right for height. And on this side, I hope you can see that okay, you have, this looks like almost like a mini seat. So this one controls your backrest, and again, this one controls the forward tilt mechanism. Mm-hmm. Now, compared to Aeron, this one only has 15 turns.
Okay.
So it's very quickly goes from one end to the other.
And the sacral mechanism on this one?
The sacral, so you have, the sacral support is built into all of our chairs beyond Aeron, rather than having a separate piece. So it's probably not very easy to demonstrate on camera, but the backrest actually comes out and it curves around, so you've got that sort of flat proportion on the backrest. Then you also have additional lumbar support should you want it.
Ah, so now we have got lumbar support.
So now you've got added lumbar support as well.
Yeah.
To be honest, with the sacral support, it's not essential you have a lumbar support, and it is an option on the chair. But the good thing about this chair as well is the way that the seat pan moves. There's a grab handle just under the front, so it's very easy to change the seat pan without having to get off the chair and without causing you to have a gap between the backrest and
how
the seat pan.
How important is that, that the seat pan's the right length for your
thighs? It's the biggest problem with people not setting up their chairs correctly. Right. So what happens, I'm not very good at demonstrating this because I've got quite long legs, but if you're relatively short and the front of the seat pan impacts on the front of your leg, what you'll tend to do is sit away from the backrest. Yeah. So then you're not getting any of the, you know, great support from the backrest, and that's when people start to have more issues with their lower back in particular.
Okay. And that means, therefore, that if people are not going to buy a mirror or one of the other Herman Miller chairs, what they've really got to do is find someone who can produce a chair with the right length seat.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is quite critical that they can have some sort of seat depth adjustment, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of chairs in general, you want them to be able to have as much adjustment as possible. So things like the seat pan, obviously the lumbar support, that again is another bonus of having the sacral support, is everybody's sacral area is the same when they sit down. It hasn't got to have that level of motion which lumbar support. And again, we have some research studies just looking at the variation between people of looking at the different lumbar regions.
Yeah, okay. Going back to my thing about armrests, I mean, I think they're getting a bit shorter on this chair than they were on the last one.
They are, yeah.
I've never tried them, but I had the feeling that probably elbow rests were better than armrests.
Yeah.
Do you have an opinion on that? I mean, all we've got then is a small pad for the elbow.
It's a really difficult one because it tends to come down to people's personal preference.
Right.
It tends to come down to people's personal preference whether they use the armrests or not.
Mm-hmm. But if they're you tend to, don't you? Or am I wrong there?
It really depends. Like I said before, people tend to adjust them badly and then they end up with their shoulders very much hunched up. For the majority of time, I'd probably say for people to keep them quite out of the way anyway. But having elbow rest rather than arm rest, I mean, you know, I think when you get to this length of arm rest, it doesn't make too much of a difference.
Yeah. All right. So is this is the latest generation of
this is the latest generation? Yes.
Okay. And how do we get to that? What's the progression? What's the
design
process?
So this one's quite a good example. We had a Mirror 1 chair, which was designed by Studio 7.5. They designed it and introduced it around 10 years ago. And it's been one of our most popular chairs within the UK, very, very comfortable. They designed mechanisms such as the roll front seat.
Mm-hmm.
The backrest, again, is designed in maybe a slightly different material than you would be used to. So you've got for this one you've got the plastic with a molded fabric on the front, and that gives it its rigidity. So you can see all the different sort of holes and spaces in the backrest, and although they may look pretty, they are actually designed with a function as well.
Yeah.
So the larger the hole, the more flexibility within the backrest. Yeah. So this really allows it again to mould and form to your back and keep you nice and supported. So right at the base, where that posture fit is, it's obviously a lot firmer.
Now, I said at the outset, this isn't a marketing broadcast for Herman Miller. We're looking at your chairs.
Mm-hmm.
There are other manufacturers using similar sorts of materials to the untutored eye for their chairs.
Yeah.
Are people going to get a satisfactory result with that if we're looking at just thermal comfort as well as pressure distribution?
So in terms of, and I think I mentioned it before, I think you said it before, you said, oh, you've got a mesh material. We get very upset when people call the materials we use mesh, because it is a suspension material. It has got some level of intelligence to it. You see a lot of chairs or manufacturers maybe that have copied the backrest, but nobody's ever managed to get the performance of the seat pan. So that just demonstrates really the level of the material.
Okay.
There are quite a few with the mesh backrest, and if you get the chance to try the two different ones, you can feel how very different it is.
Yeah.
They tend to be a lot softer, but have sort of built-in plastic parts in order to give you some rigidity.
Okay. Righto. So take us through the third of the chairs that you've got.
The third of the chairs,
which
okay.
Which is the Embody.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. So the Embody chair then I think is the one we would considered our most ergonomic chair. Okay. It's got slightly different...
Certainly different, isn't it?
It's different. I must admit, it is a little bit of a Marmite chair. People either love it or they hate it. Some people have asked us if we finished it because it's got no covering on the back. But once people sit in it, I can guarantee that they go away loving it. If I could just have actually the seat pan, and then I can show you the reason why they love this chair so much. So the way that the backrest is constructed, and I hope you can see that, there is almost like a pocket sprung mattress. So you have four different levels which give you very, very pixelated support. Mm-hmm. That really gives you that level of comfort that people are looking for. Then that's just covered with a very fine layer of material, because again, we don't want to interrupt that thermal comfort. We want the breathability mm-hmm. underneath people's bums, but we also want them to be super duper comfortable. So this chair was really designed with technology in mind. Again, the guy who designed the Aeron chair continued and did this one, but the brief was that it had to work with technology. So I guess if I just show you quickly, if you can see this, the way that the backrest works is that it maintains my eye line. So when we're working with technology, like we said before, you know, we would always encourage people to be moving in the chair. Yeah. So we would encourage them to be leaning back or, you know, changing their posture regularly throughout the day. The problem with that is that the technology tends to be fixed. Yes. Not everybody has monitor arms that they can move regularly. Mm. With the Embody chair, the way that the tilt mechanism within the chair, so the way it moves backwards, is designed, it's designed to maintain that eye line. So if I can just do my laser eyes, you can see even as I move back, there's only a slight change in the height of my eye line. So it allows you to stay connected to your technology.
Right. And if I remember rightly, there's an independent mechanism between the back and the seat, isn't there? So that the seat stays in a constant position while the back is moving?
So
it doesn't
yeah.
pull your shirt out when you lean back on
no,
the chair?
No. Yeah. So all of our chairs are designed with that, actually. Yeah. So the tilt mechanism works in a ratio. With this one, it is a bit more fixed, but you have the extra adjustment. If I just come round here and show you. So you have this extra adjustment which allows, if you want to sit in the chair actually,
oh, okay.
That'd be great.
Yeah. We'll get shouted at by the camera team again because I'll say that we're spoiling
the shot.
I know,
but never mind. But you can feel that moving up along here.
Yeah.
And that's what really makes a difference. And it makes people feel more supported up into their upper back.
Yes, yeah, indeed.
How do you find that chair? Do you think it's comfortable?
Yeah, it's very comfortable. And I was just reflecting on the fact that we're almost alone in these offices this evening. There might be a few fewer chairs in it when we leave afterwards because they are very comfortable. But we all know, I mean, that's all great, but we all know that the Swiss ball is best, don't we?
Don't get me started on those Swiss balls.
I want to get you started on the Swiss ball because everybody says, you know, this is what you need at your desk. Have a nice Swiss ball. And
yeah, so Swiss balls, I understand the sort of, the theory behind it. However, the problem comes that we sit in offices for at least 8 hours a day, essentially.
Yeah.
And to sit unsupported for 8 hours a day is a big issue for people. And particularly, it tends to be people looking for alternatives to chairs. Maybe they have back injuries or things like that. And then they're sitting in a very unsupported posture. Which tends to cause more difficulties. The issue too is that I know Swiss balls come in different sizes, but they're not always compatible with the desk height. So then you impact on different issues around, you know, shoulders moving up and, you know, not being at the right height for typing, not being at the right height for your monitor.
Yeah.
So by all means, if people want to use them for a short period of time, sort of 20 minutes, half an hour in the day, and, you know, it helps to strengthen the core, which is great. But if it's unsupported, that you're never going to maintain that throughout a day in the office.
No, and I think, I can't speak for other osteopaths, but I know that in my clinic, we've gone away from, not gone away, I don't think we've ever said it, but we'll say to people, if you want to use a Swiss ball to sit at a desk, then have something else that you can get into after you've been using it for a short period of time. Because, yes, you're going to get the movement on it, but you don't get any of the support. And probably you're going to get very tired very quickly and then start doing lots of bad things.
Yeah, that's the problem. Because people get tired and fatigued very quickly, you then end up with... people sitting in very awkward postures. And you can see that if somebody's got an injury, they maybe change their posture and they end up sitting in an even worse posture, and then that obviously has knock-on effects to everything else as well.
And I know there is another big question to be asked, actually, and it's nothing. I'm not asking you this. About, you know, the whole business of core stability and Swiss balls. And I know, you know, there's a very well-known osteopath, Eyal Lederman, who has a very instructive and entertaining lecture on the myth of core stability. And one of his key elements in that is that what you get good at by doing exercises or by sitting on a Swiss ball is exercises on a Swiss ball or sitting on a Swiss ball. It doesn't actually necessarily convey to other aspects of your life. But of course, if you're training to sit at a workstation, what you need to do is to fit sitting at the workstation. Now, this is a very predictable question that has just been handed to me.
Okay.
And it's one I've been hedging around.
Okay.
So thank you for whoever sent this one in. Basically, it says, can any of us afford these chairs?
Of course,
but before we go on with that, remember, this isn't about us affording the chairs. This is about us advising our patients what the best chair would be for our patients. And we're going to tease out of Lillian at some point this evening, if you can't afford a Herman Miller chair, what should we do? What are the the key stages in advising a patient or anyone else for that matter on workstation setup? So can anyone afford these chairs other than big business? Or the cabinet office, which is spending taxpayers' money?
I think they can. I think it depends what emphasis you put on your chair. But I always say to people that if you're going to be sitting in your chair for 8 hours plus a day, then why wouldn't you want to spend the money on it? I think, you know, you notice very quickly if you're sitting in a bad posture. If we say, let's say, in a coffee shop and you're sitting on your laptop and maybe it's on your lap and you're sitting on this, you feel that very quickly in your lower back. You feel that very quickly in your neck. And it's the same if you're not sitting on the correct task chair. If you're not getting that correct level of support, that you very, very quickly become uncomfortable, you become less productive, but you also start to have those aches and pains that you really, really don't want. So I think, you know,
it's
think
hard to convince someone of that, though, isn't it?
Yes,
because when
of
you
course
take,
it is.
When you take a person who hasn't perhaps got any back problems or anything else and say, well, I want you to spend several hundred pounds on a chair rather than 140, which I know you can spend, you know, in IKEA perhaps. In fact, yes, IKEA is a good example because I know we in the past have bought chairs from, let's say, IKEA at somewhere around £150 mark for our reception team and so on. And within a very short space of time, they start to fall apart. Now, maybe we didn't set them up properly, maybe we don't maintain them properly, but I've also noticed that I can start to feel the bolts through the material on my back as I'm leaning back in the chair. My dear old Aeron, which has been with me since 2005, I don't know how old it was then, you know, I've never given it any maintenance, but actually it's still comfortable. But had you said to me back then, well, I think you should spend this much money on a chair because it's going to last you 20 years, I'd probably have said, well, actually, I'd rather spend 140, and if it falls apart in 2 or 3 years, then I'll spend another 140. So there's some work to be done on convincing patients of the value of investing in their chair, perhaps. And I suppose the answer to, well, I mean, the question was for you, not for me, can we afford it? And it seems to me what you're saying is it depends how seriously you take your health over the long term, isn't it?
I think so, definitely. I mean, and if you think of it in terms of, you know, I don't know, maybe a car or something as well, you know, you will spend, you will invest the money if you believe it's the right thing for you.
So, well, that's an interesting one. Let's take ergonomics outside the workstation and look at cars then. Have you done any work on seating in different cars and how it affects people?
So, well, before, prior to coming to Herman Miller, I was an ergonomics consultant. So I spent 4 years sort of out and about doing various assessments. So that included workstation assessments, manual handling. But we also, as part of that, used to do vehicle assessments as well. And that's amazing how much of an impact that can have. I've had a colleague recently actually who asked me to come and have a look at her car because she couldn't get comfortable and she was having problems in certain areas of her back and she couldn't quite work out why that suddenly was happening. But she had recently changed her car. Mm-hmm. I won't mention what make and model of car it was, but her pedals are offset.
That's quite common, isn't it?
It is quite common. Well, it's actually becoming more common as well to have them slightly offset. Right. But that's causing her really bad problems in, you know, one side of her hips and things like that. So it's really, and that actually was quite an expensive make and model of car as well. So it's surprising that they put a different emphasis maybe on, you know, the comfort of somebody or don't see the importance of that.
Yeah, and I think probably most physical therapists during their training will have had that issue raised at some stage. When a patient's got problems, you've got to look at how they sit in the car. Rather like the chair, isn't it? I mean, you can't. It's not easy to say to a patient, you've got to invest in a different car, because especially if it's not as expensive as the one you're very keen on. Okay. So I'm still trying to... From everything we say so far, it seems to boil down to let's buy a Herman Miller chair. When a patient comes into one of our clinics and we're asking them about their workstation, what questions would you ask about the workstation to try and get to the root cause of how that might be affecting the problem that they're complaining about?
Okay, so what we need to remember in terms of, you know, ergonomics and a workstation setup, it's not just about the chair. I do think the chair is a really important factor in all of this, but if the rest of the workstation isn't there, then there's an issue as well. We've got to think of the workstation as a real system.
Yes.
So it's important that you have the correct chair, but also that your desk is at the correct height. If your desk is too high in particular, that causes a lot of problems with shoulders.
Yes.
I've mentioned laptops a few times. If people's screen heights aren't correct, then wherever your eyes look, your body will follow. So again, if you're in this sort of forward hunched position, that puts a lot of pressure on the discs in your lower back. Positioning of keyboards and mice and things like that. If you're stretched out all day long with your mouse over here somewhere, then obviously you're going to end up with problems with your shoulders at the by the end of the day as well. So it's really thinking of everything as a system, and remembering to move throughout the day. We're very good at getting very focused in on our work, and I know it sometimes becomes difficult if you've got that deadline or whatever, but movement is really key in all of this as well. We're not designed to sit down, unfortunately, all day long.
And one of the questions which has just come is can we have a demonstration of a workstation setup? Now, the thing is, we are going to do that. We're going to do it afterwards because we can't do it in this environment here. But we're going to record Lillian setting me up correctly as a workstation, and we'll put that up as a recording on the website as soon as we've edited it and tidied it up a little bit, along with the text summary. Remember that booklet I mentioned will also be available as a free download. Which is a very good guide. It goes further than most of the ones I've seen in the past because it talks about setting up the laptop as well as the seat and the workstation itself. And you also here, you've got these really fancy desks that go up and down as
we
well,
have,
haven't
yes,
you? Which is electric desks which you can raise to whatever height, which means you can stand up out of the chair easily and not alter the angle of your eye line and the screen, which I think is just such a phenomenal idea. Anything that gets me moving at the desk would be very welcome.
And I mean, they're really, a really great way of encouraging, again, movement. So, you know, I always use myself as quite a classic example of how much I sit down during the day. As much as I'm fully aware of all the issues with that, I do still, you know, I have quite a long commute into work every day. So I commute for over an hour, then I get to work and I sit down for the majority of the day, and then I go back and, you know, maybe if I'm a good girl, I'll go to the gym that night, but that doesn't always happen. So there's a lot of sitting in my day.
Yeah.
So how I tend to break it up now, we do have the sit to stand desk, is when I first come in the morning, I bring my desk up, I raise it up, and then I'll work for an hour maybe. And I'll try and alternate during the day. There was some research recently that I read that it's really great to be able to stand working after lunch because it helps to even out your blood sugar levels and stops you going into this sort of immediate after lunch slump.
Right. And that's proper research, is it?
Yes,
rather than somebody's pet theory.
It is proper research.
Yeah, okay. A couple of questions here. Actually, one of them's not a question.
Okay.
But what did you recommend to the person with the offset pedals? Did you say you need to change your car, and did she or he?
It's a very difficult one when it's a fundamental thing of the car. You know, you can adjust the chair, you can adjust the steering wheel, you can adjust many things within these chairs. But when it is offset pedals, if it's causing that much of an issue, unfortunately, you do get to the point where, you know, that seems like that's the cause. And then you're stuck. You can't make any more adjustments to the car. She has recently changed her car, and she has found that her symptoms have improved. However, that wasn't the, you know, I didn't go, right, well, you should just buy yourself a new car, because obviously that's a very expensive business to be telling people to be doing that. But it's very difficult in those situations where you really haven't got any control or adjustment. That's why when we talk about work chairs or office chairs, that they should have as much adjustment as you can possibly have.
My pet theory, which I pass on to patients, is that actually a lot of our problems are born out of habits rather than any particular incident. That's my pet theory. I'm not alone in this. And if you are driving your car a lot and your legs are always canted off to presumably the left, that is going to have an impact on you. I can only cross my legs this way. I can't do it the other way around. So, and I do it quite a lot, so that's going to have an impact on me. I would imagine there's an impact on people with, who use two monitors or more monitors at their desk as well, isn't there? Because that will affect the way they hold their neck if they haven't got those set up.
If they're not set up correctly, definitely. I think with anything, actually, with the workstation, people do have their own habits and their own ways of doing things, and that can actually end up causing, you know, some big issues. And that's really the key when we talk about ergonomics, and I try to always talk about how important education is when ergonomics is involved, because people need to learn and understand it in order to be able to apply it, because changing people's habits is a very, very difficult thing to do. If they've been working in that way for 10 plus years, then changing that habit is really, really difficult.
Yes. I think it is covered in the booklet that we're providing to people, but if I remember correctly, then the way that you would recommend for setting up two monitors, and you know, I think most people, once they've worked with two monitors, would never go back to a single monitor, is to have the main monitor in front of you and your secondary monitor to one side, rather than balance them symmetrically. So you're always looking.
There's really two ways. So either way is correct, but what you have to work out is how you're using your monitors. So what tasks you're doing. So if you've got two monitors and you know, maybe you use big documents or big spreadsheets and you need them both directly in front of you in order to be able to work, then that's fine. Yeah. What if people are completely honest with themselves, what they usually tend to do is have a primary monitor and then they'll have one to compare things with. Yeah. I did a lot of work with investment banks before I came here, and they had banks of eight monitors. Yes. And that becomes even more difficult when they insist that actually they are using all of them equally, which we all know is not actually possible for them to be concentrating on eight screens at once.
It struck me ages ago that the nearest we'll ever come to the paperless office is when actually you've got enough monitors to replicate your desk. All those piles of paper on your desk, if they can go onto monitors, then you can forget this stuff. Yeah. But that's the great attraction of having them, isn't it? You can push all your documents into one space.
Yes.
But as you say, we will concentrate on one monitor almost all the time. Of course, it's all very well to say that your chair will swivel, but you won't swivel to look at that monitor because your keyboard's still over here, and that doesn't swivel with you.
And, you know, there's people that do sit like that. If they've got maybe a corner desk or something, that they sit with their keyboard over here and they sit with their monitors over there, and, you know, the impact on your neck then is immediately noticeable as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see what people do when they're left to their own devices. Yeah.
We've got some very sharp-eyed people watching this evening, because when you positioned me in the mirror, I think it was the Aeron you did all the adjustments on, apparently my knees were at 90 degrees and my hips as well, and they want to know if that's correct, because they feel that the angle of flexion should be different
to be correctly set up.
Was the 90 degrees just accidental for the demonstration while you fiddled with my knobs? I had to read that bit out. I don't know where those were.
I'm sure it's the same for you guys. There's sort of different, schools of thought on what position your pelvis.
I'm so pleased to hear you say that there isn't a rigid answer to this.
No, there really isn't.
Yeah.
Because number one, it comes down to a lot of personal preference. Some people don't like to be in this sort of forward posture. They find it very uncomfortable, and actually, then they tend to sit in a more tense position, which obviously then has its knock-on effects as well. I think having the option to be able to work in different postures is quite key. Yeah. But I would never say any one posture is, you know, the right one for you all day long. Because, you know, again, we come back to our chairs, but the, you know, the chairs are designed in order to allow you to have different postures throughout the day. So, you know, I would never recommend, even if you had the perfect chair, the perfect desk, the perfect ergonomic setup, if you sat like that all day long, you would still have aches and pains at the end of the day. So it's really about having that choice of different positions as well, I think.
It's curious how we all accept that we're all, you know, two people of the same height and the same weight will have different proportions, and yet we all still look for that single solution to a problem, don't we? And it probably doesn't exist. I have been asked to raise this particular point, which is a problem with the Aeron chair.
That's okay.
You talked about breathing through one's bottom, through the suspension fabric, material on the bottom. Actually, the soundproofing on the Aeron chair, I am told by I'm not going to name her, but this is a story from our camera lady.
Yes, yes.
The soundproofing is not good, is it? In fact, it seems to amplify farts.
Wow. Yeah, maybe people should be going outside to
encourage movement. Yeah,
exactly. Encourage even more movement.
What about those saddle chairs? What do you think about those?
Again, you have the same issues as you do with, say, a Swiss ball, is that you're being almost forced into a, because they tend to be a very forward posture, so very forward sitting, and again you haven't got any back support, so again it comes down to that sort of core stability issue. Again, if you want to sit on those for short periods of time, then that's okay, but it's not a long term it's not a long term solution.
I'd be interested to hear other people's thoughts on these different seating types, because I'm sure amongst the people who are watching this evening, we've got people who are great fans of those saddle chairs or of Swiss balls and probably spend their whole day on them, and I'd like to know what their experience of that is, or on their experience of patients that have come in who use them themselves. I accept that I am talking to a senior ergonomist from Herman Miller when I ask this question on behalf of one of our viewers. But Viking sell ergonomic chairs, any good?
I don't know Viking's range of ergonomic chairs, I've got to be honest. I think that is a problem that ergonomics became quite a trendy word at one point. For example, I saw in Boots the other day an ergonomic hairbrush. Now, I'm not sure how this hairbrush was ergonomic.
Maybe it's the hair that's ergonomic.
Maybe it's the hair, I don't know, but it was an ergonomic hairbrush, and I couldn't work out for the life of me what made it any more ergonomic than the one that was sitting next to it. So I think it did become a very...
I imagine it cost more money.
Of course it did. But yeah, I mean, that's that sort of thing. But I think for Herman Miller, we can demonstrate our heritage of ergonomics, that we've been considering it for, you know, 50 plus years. It's not something that we, you know, have jumped on this year because we think it's the right thing to do. Our sort of designs, even from back in the 60s, are proven in ergonomic design. So
what does the health and safety executive recommend in terms of office seating?
In terms of office seating, so we have obviously the DSE regulations that we have to comply with. So that gives you a sort of overview of workstation setup. They're very limited in what they say a chair should do. Obviously, the British standards and things like that go into another level of detail. But, you know, you must have five wheels on your chair. It must be a swivel chair. And the lumbar support must be adjustable up and down. Or, sorry, the backrest should be adjustable up and down in order to correctly position the lumbar support.
Oh, that's interesting. So you must have some form of lumbar support in the chair.
So you must have some sort of, back support. Now, you know, we've talked about posture fit and the sacral support. We've had external people look at that to see if it's an adequate way of supporting your back. And we've got certificates, again, to say that.
Okay. Where's the future going, then, with... ergonomics with, I mean, the nature of the human body isn't changing that much. So what's the next development in plan for Herman Miller?
In terms of Herman Miller, I guess as a company, we're talking much more of the office in maybe a more holistic way. So I think we've said it before, it's not just about the chair, the desk and the monitor arm, it's really about all of these different spaces. You know, as you walk through this building, you can see that we've got different areas and different spaces within the office where people can still go and work. So, you know, people can drop down, sit on a sofa and work if they want to. So from my point of view is trying to ensure that people really do genuinely understand ergonomics and what advice we're trying to give them, but help them to apply them in these different settings. So, you know, people, we talk a lot about workstation ergonomics in a traditional sense, but maybe not so much in these different different areas.
Have you researched, or has anybody researched, the effectiveness of having treadmills at the desk?
I haven't. I know that, again, that they've become quite popular, particularly in New York. They seem to like them. Again, I have a real issue with these treadmill workstations because, again, the theory works that, you know, you get in your movement, you're getting your exercise, you're keeping those biochemical processes going. But the problem comes when you need to concentrate on a screen. Majority of us will be working on a computer, we're using a monitor. And the problem then is that your eyes constantly have to refocus. If you think about even trying to, you know, walk and text or something at the same time, it's a very, very difficult thing for you to do because your eyes are constantly refocusing and you end up with what's called rapid eye fatigue. And which very quickly makes you feel very tired and your eyes very uncomfortable. You've also got to think about, you know, the actual process of walking and trying to type at the same time. It's sort of competing muscle activities really throughout the day. So again, it becomes very difficult and very tiring for our brain to keep up with.
Okay. Oh, are you familiar? This is a question from one of the viewers. Are you familiar with a wave seat stool on a V-shaped rocker?
No, unfortunately, I'm not.
Apparently, it puts the sacrum in the correct position for the spine to balance on.
Right.
And I assume it's used for fewer hours than a normal office worker, i.e. an osteopath, maybe. That's an interesting one. Whoever sent that question in, if you can send us some references to that. I mean, if you're happy, we'll send it to you.
I can give you a quick review.
Happy to put up on the website. But, that's an interesting one. I've never heard of those either.
No. Sorry, I'm usually pretty good on my being a chair geek, but not on that one, I'm afraid.
Yeah. So I wonder, maybe we didn't do that question about Viking chairs as much justice as it deserved, because I suspect that a lot of people in small businesses with small workforces will go for whatever meets the health and safety executives or DSE's directives. Mm-hmm. And Viking are, you know, they're stationers, but they produce all this stuff. They'll probably go for the simple option that it's got five wheels and it does swivel and you can adjust the back somehow. other than, say, go and buy from Herman Miller, I mean, what do people do to satisfy themselves that they're at least getting some benefit from this chair?
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, you know, I would always say the chair has to have some level of adjustability. So you have to be able to adjust the height correctly, you know. And it has to adjust correctly in comparison to the desk. The chair in isolation, maybe then you can get your legs at a right angle or, you know, what position that you feel comfortable. But if then your desk is very high, then you're still not going to work very well with the whole thing as a system. So it needs to be able to adjust to the correct height for you, for one. Number two, yes, you need to get some back support. The problem, what tends to happen with a lot of cheaper chairs is that the way that the backrest and the seat pan move is that the backrest moves up, the seat pan moves forward, and then you're left with a big gap.
Yes.
Now that, we know, is a very critical area to get supported. It's, you know, it helps to support the pelvis, helps to keep you in that sort of upright, aligned position. So if you're losing that support completely, and then people tend to sort of sit very much into this gap, and that puts them, again, in a very bad posture. So it's really about trying to get the adjustments correct. And also, I think with the seat pan, making sure that that's not too long. If it's shorter, that's less of an issue. If it's too long, yeah. then you won't sit against the backrest and you won't yeah. get any of the support from the chair.
And I guess one of the problems is going to be that when you buy from Viking, then you don't get the option to check these things, do you? Because, yes, you get the basic dimensions of the seat, but until you get it, you can't know whether it's going to fit your workforce. And what's more, you're probably going to use it for half a dozen different receptionists, so or for half a dozen osteopaths or whoever else, all of whom are going to have different leg lengths and so on.
And you get different levels, you know, support from Herman Miller. If you're buying a Herman Miller seat, then, you know, you can come to our various showrooms and have a look. You can, you know, speak to somebody like me or our product managers and people like that. You know, we provide training sessions on, you know, sort of large scale. So, you know, you've got that extra level of support as well in terms of the product support.
Okay. This is, I mean, this is a really nice question that's come in, and I think it probably will take us back to that ergonomics hub that is available through your. Is it a Herman Miller website or is it a completely independent website?
So it's a microsite, so it's not hosted on our thing, but it is a Herman Miller owned. I designed the training, and we designed it as a CPD similar to this.
And so we will provide the links, so don't worry about it now, but there are a number of a number of videos with questions afterwards, all of which would be very useful, CPD by oneself, all of which relate to ergonomics, what you can advise your patients. It's translatable, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the question that's come in here is, has research been done to monitor medical musculoskeletal changes in people using their chairs over time? And they're thinking about the effects of breathing, digestion, abdominal muscle tone and so on.
So in terms of specifically with chairs, like I mentioned earlier, there was a conference I went to for a day, and this isn't my research, just to clarify, but research from academics in different universities, and they were very much looking at the, you know, the effects of long-term sitting. So, you know, the effect of sitting, number one, in our work day, but also outside of our work day. That's what we sort of tend to forget. We think about being sat in the office, but we forget that actually we're sitting down in the evening having dinner, then we're sitting and watching, you know, whatever TV in the... And so we actually, accumulatively, we end up with this very long period of sitting. And there is some really, really quite, you know, serious impacts on what's going on inside your body. For one example, there is an enzyme called lipoprotein lipase, I hope I've got that right now, which helps to remove the fatty plaques from your bloodstream. After a period of an hour of sitting, that drops very significantly by, I think, about 20%. So that actually then affects your cholesterol levels.
Right.
So all of these obviously in turn then have a bigger effect on bigger and horribler diseases.
Is that what you intimated there, of course, or you hinted at, is the fact that our lifestyle now is one of long chunks of time spent doing the same thing rather than it being interspersed with activity or different activity, isn't it? So people go to their office and they'll sit in a chair for 4 hours, go for lunch maybe, where they'll sit somewhere and have lunch, and they'll come back and they'll sit for 4 hours, sit on a train or a bus and get home, and then sit watching the telly. So there's a little bit of activity in all of that, but perhaps not enough to balance all the sitting.
Yeah.
I mean, is that research serious earlier on about, you know, you can improve circulation and so on in certain types of chair, though? I mean, how does that work?
It is true. It was proven in the study, but that was only one study that was done.
Do we know the size of the population in that, or the strength of the study? Or?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
No, it's unfair to ask off the top of your head.
But it was a reasonable sample group, and I know it came back as a, you know, it was statistically significant.
Right. Okay.
But off the top of my head, I couldn't give you any figures around it, I'm afraid.
No. Okay. Keep the questions coming in, please, but do remember you've got about 4 or 5 minutes before the screen will freeze briefly when that red button comes up, which will enable you to download your certificate for this evening's training. Please don't click it straight away, because it will take you away from the main broadcast, but it will stay on the screen for about an hour. So getting back to your own research, I mean, are you involved in research now? Are there aspects of ergonomics which particularly ring your bells?
Well, at the moment,
hairbrushes, obviously, are not one of them.
Hairbrushes are top of the list, yes, definitely. Well, the main one I'm interested in is how to get people engaged with height-adjustable tables. So we have fantastic products that you will show as part of the video later, looking at, you know, that allow people to use sit-to-stand workstations. But how do we actually encourage people to do that? Because it's very nice to give them the equipment, but as we know with some chairs, people just don't adjust them if they don't feel comfortable or confident to do it. So that's my sort of next phase of research at the moment.
Right. Okay. And are those height-adjustable tables becoming more readily available in the workplace, Jenny?
I think it's something that's maybe become more, people in the UK are starting to pick up on it. If you go somewhere like in Scandinavia, for example, or Norway, Sweden, whichever country, they use height adjustable tables as their standard.
Really?
Because they recognise the importance of being able to change your posture regularly throughout the day, whereas it's something that UK businesses do use, but they may have one or two across a floor rather than having them for everybody.
Right.
And I think, again, it just comes down to, you know, choice of how people want to work. I'm not saying that everybody should have a height adjustable desk either, because I realise that has quite big cost implications, but having different areas and different, you know, being able to work in different postures, even if it's a, you know, a standing height desk in one end and a sitting height desk at the other, it does help people just to change their postures.
Well, I have to say, I got quite excited about the whole idea when I saw them in here, when I came in here a few weeks ago for our check over of the systems and so on. It looks like a very exciting, very interesting way to go about doing one's business.
Yeah, definitely.
And you said it is catching on more in this country, or is that just that Herman Miller's sales are going up a bit? Or
No, it is definitely becoming a more popular way to work. I think it's being recognised as an issue that people are sitting for longer periods of time, and I think that's reflected in, you know, the statistics that come out around musculoskeletal disorders and all of those things, that, you know, there has to be something more proactive that businesses can do.
Do you have any connection yourself with any of the practitioners locally, physiotherapists, chiropractors, osteopaths?
Some, but yeah, quite limited at the moment.
Right.
Yeah.
What are the opportunities for them to, you know, come in and maybe learn some more? Is it? I mean, it's unreasonable to say you suddenly have a flock of osteopaths come to visit your headquarters just to talk to you about ergonomics. Mm-hmm. Is it limited to the ergonomics hub and the downloads that we've got, or are there other ways that they can find out about this sort of
thing? I mean, I'm very open to doing things like that. Obviously, like you said, you know, I couldn't have one person popping in every day to come and have a session, but if we wanted to set up something more formal, I'm, you know, more than happy to do that. In the past, I've done sessions with groups in London. We did one that was just concentrated on seating, so we went a bit more in depth of what we started talking about earlier on around the ergonomic performance of our chairs. But what I also have as well is a what I call the ergonomic workshop, which basically takes you through step by step of, you know, what the principles of good posture are, how to set up the workstation, and we talk a little bit more about some of the musculoskeletal disorders as well. So, you know, I'm quite open to doing that in a controlled way.
Yeah, okay. So perhaps I could suggest that if there are osteopaths who are interested in doing something like that, if they let us know through the website, then you know, we can try to set something up. I'm not promising you're going to get, you know, 2.5 hours a week of coming into the Miller and practicing on the chairs, but you know, but we can certainly approach you and see what's feasible.
Of course,
And are you able to travel further afield than Chippenham?
Yes. Well, we've got our London showroom, so that gives us another really good base, and obviously then we've got all of our products there as well. But yeah, I mean,
it's got to be at a Herman Miller showroom.
It does, and it just makes it easier because we've got the furniture then. Saves me bringing a chair on my back.
Is ergonomics, I mean, is it restricted to chairs that you're going to sit in for a long period of time? Because somebody's very sensibly asked the question, what about temporary chairs, you know, in a waiting room, for example? Mm-hmm. Are these Herman Miller chairs?
Yes.
They are? So this is the sort of chair that you might have in a waiting room.
Yeah.
Is there anything special about these?
No.
Okay. So, so is that, I mean, that is your answer to the question then, that if it's only for a short period of time, then you don't really need to worry? Or are there bad things that you could have in waiting room chairs as well?
I mean, it depends on the type of waiting room as well. I mean, you can think of a waiting room as in a reception area that maybe you are literally just sitting down on for two minutes. So yeah. If you're perching on the edge of a chair, then that's not going to be too. Right. But if you think about, I don't know, doctor's surgeries or things where you will be actually sitting for maybe longer periods of time, then maybe you want to. It yeah. needs to have been considered. I'm not saying you need the ergonomic performance of a task chair or. Mm. But something that people can sit in relatively comfortably yeah. for a period of time.
So it's okay
to
use common sense in this regard,
yes,
is it?
Of course, so, of course it is, yes.
If you're inviting yeah. people into your practice who are likely to have musculoskeletal injuries, maybe they don't want to sink into some deep sofa. They want something
exactly.
with arms that they can push themselves yeah. out of.
And, yeah, and yeah. the correct height as well. What tends to happen a lot with you know, things like sofas and side chairs and things like that is they can be quite low.
Yeah.
So that's another, you know, consideration that people yeah. do have to get in and out of them. And like you said, the armrests help with yeah. that.
So tell me the questions I haven't asked that I should have asked this evening, because I mean we've got a few minutes left. And
okay. Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, we've talked around some of our chairs. I guess the maybe the one thing that we didn't cover was, you know, around, you know, making sure that it covers a wide range of the population. That's really important, something mm. we try quite hard to do, to get them to fit as many people as possible. And again, that comes down to why our chairs are so adjustable, maybe have too many knobs and levers for some people. But, you know, we really design hard to get those to fit people.
I suppose the business with the knobs and levers might challenge some people, because they might not, they wouldn't know when they've got it right, mm-hmm. and therefore, rather like going to the supermarket and seeing 300 different brands of Colgate, you'd rather
yeah.
go for the toothpaste where there's only one choice.
Yeah.
And okay. people don't want to have to go through a training course when mm-hmm. they get their chair, do they?
Yeah. No.
Is it just about, well, what feels comfortable?
It's what feels comfortable, and I think maintaining a neutral posture. So when you're sitting down, I always really concentrate around this shoulder thing, because people yeah. in the working offices tend to have this build-up of tension within mm-hmm. the shoulders. So that's a really, really critical one for people to remember. And it tends to be the one that people get wrong, because we tend to talk very much about getting the right angle with your knee.
Mm-hmm.
If your desk is then very high, then that's not actually the correct position. You should always be able to set yourself above the workstation, above the work surface first,
yeah.
and then you worry about people's feet afterwards. So maybe they need a footrest, or, you know, maybe the desk needs to be adjusted as well.
Yeah, okay. How about this? This is a good one. Have you ever okay. looked at the effect of seating on children? The question is, what chairs should be used in schools, given that the little beggars change height quite a lot?
Yeah, so I haven't personally, but a guy that I know does work in ergonomic seating for children, and there has been a chair designed for kids that mm-hmm. does have some level of adjustment, so you have a longer seat pan, so yeah. you have a higher backrest, because like you said, children grow and they grow at a different rate, so
yeah.
it
yeah.
is definitely something that's being investigated more. There are groups within the ergonomics world that are set up to look at this, and it's definitely something that needs to be concentrated on more, because these are the children that are going to be in our offices eventually. Mm. And if they're in very bad habits already, then yeah. it tends to have a knock-on effect. And the thing is that children, you know, are using technology a lot more than ever before.
Yes.
You know, as I always remember the story of a child who picked up a book and tried to swipe it like an iPad and couldn't work out why it didn't want to move. And, you know, that's a sort of a scary fact of the way children interact. And if they're all constantly hunched over and don't understand how that's affecting their posture and affecting their bodies, then that's quite yeah. a serious potentially right. has quite serious effects.
Yeah. Well, the person who asked that question about chairs in schools apparently knows of a school which uses Swiss balls for their pupils.
Oh, really? Okay,
which
interesting.
Is an interesting one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose perhaps in schools they are saved by the fact that every 40 minutes they are going to get a break. So they're going to get up and they're going to move between lessons or at least go out to playtime or lunch or whatever. So they're probably moving around a bit more than most.
And so is that for a full school day?
I don't know the detail, but from the sound of the question, yes, that's for their school day. They have Swiss balls.
Interesting, okay.
And one suspects that that is the initiative of someone who has heard that Swiss balls are good, because there will be plenty of stuff, I'm sure, on the internet that says that they are, and has just decided that they should take that decision for all their children. Do you think that's a good decision?
Not over a long period of time. I think even for kids, I mean, you know, they're different to adults anyway. Even for kids, I think, you know, they're still in the process of growing as well, for starters. And I think, you know, having this additional movement and unsupported sitting may have some benefits for their core stability. But like you said before, it's, you know, you're trained then to do that one thing.
It'd be interesting to see some research into that, perhaps, because it is a difficult one. I mean, my instincts are that it probably isn't good for them. I mean, children get plenty of exercise anyway. Yeah.
Well, you hope so when you're
at school that they do at least get opportunities to move around and go out and play with each other and play sport and things like that. A question about downward sloping wedge cushions in seats.
Okay.
Good or bad?
The problem with anything external that you start adding onto the chair, particularly, I guess I'll talk about our chairs, is if you start to add things like that, then you lose the design intent of the chair. So our chairs, all of our chairs are designed, to support you in what we believe is the correct way. And if you start to then add wedges, particularly for things like lumbar support, if you add a wedge.
Yes.
And then you raise the person up, then they're not going to get the adequate back support.
Yeah. And I presume the aim of the wedge is to create that sacral angle that you were talking about in your chairs. But of course, in most chairs, if it raises the sitter up, then you can always drop them down a little bit with the settings on the chair, can't you?
Yeah. But it's the actual physical backrest, so you're changing
the relationship
and there'll be a,
between the bottom and backrest.
There'll be a sort of upper end of that. And I think anything, you know, it's like the lumbar cushions that you add onto the chair, what they tend to do if they're not adjustable is force people into quite an unnatural position rather than being sort of more naturally aligned. So that tends to be the problem with those things is, you know, again, the theory is great that it's helping people, you know, put people in whatever posture they feel they need to be in. But you tend to then lose the other benefits of the chair.
Yes, I suspect that people who are using these things are probably not getting chairs that have got the benefits that you know you might get from a more expensive brand of chair. Yeah. We are drawing towards the close of tonight's presentation, but one of the comments that has said that it seems to be all about movement, about exercise. Yeah. It's about not staying in one place for too long, rather than finding the chair that will enable you to sit all day in at your desk and not move. Mm-hmm. And I think I can recall when I went to see one of your predecessors in London all those years ago. He said that, you know, on the Aeron, it's designed for you to screw your legs up and sit on your ankles and twist around and do all sorts of things. Yeah. And the idea even then was that you didn't sit still. You moved around and just kept the joints moving. Mm-hmm. And it's a good osteopathic philosophy, isn't it? That actually we want to keep people moving, we want to encourage circulation, and that's far more important than sitting still on the perfect height, the perfect angle, and getting the eye line right with the computer.
Definitely.
We have one more question coming in, which I'm going to take right now. And it's a similar one. It's about car seats and slimline wedges for car seats. And I was going to ask you actually about bead backs for seats in vehicles, which
Tried and
trendy.
Tested by taxi drivers.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, do they? Is there any evidence to show that they encourage circulation?
I haven't seen any evidence, but there tends to be a reason why people go back to doing the same thing.
Well, you can't argue with a taxi driver, can you? You can try.
Definitely not. Definitely not a taxi driver.
Okay, I mean, the wedges on car seats, which was
the question. I think you have to be mindful of how the car seat adjusts as well, in the same way as office chairs. What tends to happen with office chairs, because it's all smaller seats in itself, is that you really move the person away from, you know, getting the correct support. With car seats, you have a little bit more play. So with adding those things, sometimes they do help. But again, you need to ensure that the lumbar sits in the right place. You know, you're getting the support across your legs. You're not then pushing yourself into difficult positions. It's the same sort of principle, really.
If you spend enough money on your car these days, then you can adjust the length of the seat pan as well,
exactly.
Can't you?
So you can
do any number of little adjustments to the seat itself. But having spent all that money, your legs are still at a funny angle.
Yeah, exactly, and you're still hurting your hips anyway. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's been a great evening, Lillian. Thank you very much. Again, a lot of it seems to have come down to common sense. It's lots of osteopathic principles in here.
Yeah.
And, you know, that difficulty of educating our patients into what is in their long-term interests as opposed to perhaps their short-term budgetary interests. But thank you again for all your time.
Thank you.
We'll go off and you can set me up at a workstation on a moving desk and we'll put that up on the website. Thank you all for watching.